The crisis in the church over the past few decades has caused many to lose faith and leave. That trend is accelerating under Pope Francis and includes some who were vocally Catholic in the past. What can we do as Catholics to prevent our own fall out of the church? That's what I'm going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started, first I want to note that there is a thunderstorm running through where I live right now. So if my power goes out and I lose this podcast, I'll have to start back up somewhere else. So anyway, just a warning to those who are watching live. And before I get started, just want to remind people to smash that like button and to subscribe, but don't notify. And follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. Okay, so there's a couple articles that came out recently that I want to talk about that have to do with the idea of people losing faith in the church, in Christ even. People losing faith in the church. I'm not talking about the millions of people who have left the church, just kind of walked out the doors because they didn't really think it meant anything to them. These are people to whom the church means something a great deal, but then they end up deciding to leave it. And so these are people like you and me. I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the reasons why they may have left. So people like you and me who believe the Catholic Church is the one true faith. And if you're not Catholic watching this, welcome. I appreciate that. But I will admit this podcast today is mostly geared towards practicing Catholics. But Catholics like us who do believe what the church teaches, do believe the church is the Church of Jesus Christ and take it very seriously. But yet, because of the scandals going on in the church, because of the crisis going to church, they end up losing that faith and leaving the Catholic Church. So the first article I want to mention is not somebody who has left the church, but it's Crisis Magazine. We ran it a couple weeks ago, and I got a lot of pushback for it. It's called It's Not for the Pope to Change by Robert. Rob, I'm really sorry if I mispronounced your last name, but I think it's Greving, G-R-E-V-I-N-G. And we published it back on July 28th, so a few weeks ago now. And in this article, Rob basically, he talks about the problem of the fact that Pope Francis has changed a couple teachings of the church. They're very serious. And one of his points, I'm not going to debate whether or not they're changed, because change can mean a lot of things. And what he's basically saying is what the Pope and basically the hierarchy is saying that the church believes now isn't what it believed before. And he mentions particularly two situations, Amoris Laetitia with communion for divorced and remarried, plus the teaching on capital punishment. And he mentions how it looks like they're now going to push to change the teaching on the ban on artificial contraception. And again, it's not that we can't necessarily explain what those changes, how they're not inconsistent with what we thought in the past, but it's not easy either. It's not clear to a lot of people. And so Greving writes, here's the question I'm asking myself, and I wish to God I had the answer. If Pope Francis is right, then the church up to his pontificate has been wrong, and my belief in that church has been misplaced. On the other hand, if, as I believe, the church up to Pope Francis has been right, then he is wrong. And my belief in a central tenet of that faith, her teaching authority, has been misplaced, which in turn undermines my belief in the whole structure. Now, I got a lot of pushback for this article because of the fact that Greving does not give an answer to this. He does not say, oh, here's how I resolve it. And I do understand people want the resolution. And in crisis, we typically do, we'll say something about the crisis in the church, and then we'll explain how as Catholics we can look at it, how we can understand it. This is more just like, this is a problem. And it left it at that. Now, I do think there are answers to these questions, but I do think it's also important that we treat them seriously, that we don't act like they're not real questions that are not really bothering real Catholics. It's not just simply a situation of, oh, yeah, well, just go read your Catholic Answers article on that and it'll all be resolved. And this isn't a boot on Catholic Answers. I love Catholic Answers. But there is something to be said for, I think they would even agree, Catholic Answers would, that there's a time and place for them and there's a time and place not for them. And I think sometimes when it comes to grappling with the crisis in the church today, particularly coming from Pope Francis, we have to look at this very seriously, and we can't just give an apologetical answer. as a neat and pat, tidy answer. Personally, I think what's happening is that we have to change a lot of our assumptions about what the church has taught about the papacy and about the church, about what it can and cannot do. I think we were very confident in the 1990s, for example, in the 2000s and years past about, hey, a pope can't do this. A pope can't do that. Yet the fact is we said that just because our experience was that a pope couldn't do this or that. Well, now a pope is doing that. Now, I know some people, they want to flee to sedevacantism or Benny Papism. We've talked about that before in the podcast and articles that I don't believe that is a legitimate answer. But the bigger point I'm trying to make isn't to give answers to these questions in this podcast, but simply to say they are real questions, they are real struggles, and we have to address them. We have to really grapple with them. And so and what's happening is some people are grappling with them and they leave the church. They become Orthodox. They become agnostic. I don't know very many that become Protestant, because I think once you're a committed Catholic, there's no way you could become Protestant in my mind, because you just abandon the sacramental system but keep Jesus. That just doesn't make much sense. I do understand how somebody could become Orthodox in this situation. I also understand how somebody could become agnostic atheist, just think the whole thing is a joke and let's leave it all. So these are real. This is what's really happening to people. So we want to talk about that. And now, like I said, I don't want to make it sound like Rob Greving, you know, who wrote this article, he's on that path. I thought his article was very good because he is asking questions a lot of us have, and he's taking those questions seriously. He's not just dismissing them. Another article, though, just came out at Catholic World Report by Austin Ruse, our friend Austin Ruse. He's been on the podcast. He's a regular writer for Crisis. Austin is great. Title, Fighting the Church May Lead You Right Out of the Church. This was from August 3rd, I think it was, something like that, last week. And he addresses some prominent figures in the Catholic world who have left the church in recent years. These prominent figures all were directly addressing the problems in the church in a public forum. First is Rob Dreher. I think most of us know who he is. He became Orthodox years ago. He was one of the most heroic lay people addressing the scandals in the Catholic Church in the before 2002 and even and after. But unfortunately, it led him to leave Catholicism and become Orthodox. Another one he mentions, Steve Skocek, founder of 1 Peter 5, a friend of mine, who about a year ago basically said now he's not Catholic, not practicing Catholic. I'm not 100% clear if he's agnostic or atheist. I think he's agnostic. Maybe he believes in God, but just not sure what to think of him. I don't want to put words in his mouth. And so he's left, and he was obviously another person who was very public speaking about the problems in the church. And also, Austin mentions Joseph Scambra. Joseph Scambra is another heroic person, frankly, who was a practicing homosexual, was groomed also by priests, by Catholics, ended up becoming a faithful Catholic and really tried to expose the hierarchy, homosexuality that exists in the hierarchy in the priesthood. But he also recently left the Catholic Church. He became Orthodox not too long ago. I want to say maybe a year or so ago. Actually, the rosary in my pocket right now was made by Joseph Scambra. I still keep it, still use it, and I appreciate it from him. And so Austin brings up all these people. And from the title of the article, you kind of see what he's saying. Fighting the church may lead you right out of the church. He's lamenting the fact that these good men have all left the Catholic Church. And I think he ends the article, if I remember correctly, by basically saying, we want you back, which is true. We do. We want all three of you back. We want you back, Rod. We want you back, Steve. We want you back, Joe. All three of you. And anybody else who's left the church, we want you back. And his advice he gives is, he says, my advice for what's worth, this is Austin Ruse talking. My advice for what's worth is for people in these fights not to be so concerned about wins and losses. Do not care quite so much. Forgive this string of platitudes. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. And then you keep trying, but without fretting over the box scores. Now, one thing I want to note is Austin Ruse is not somebody who succumbs to quietism. He's not somebody who avoids the fight or anything like that. In fact, he's the exact opposite. Austin is somebody who's been fighting the fight for a very long time, longer than almost all of us. He has been fighting the fight at the United Nations. My goodness, talk about the axis of evil. He has been fighting against evil for a very long time. He's seen it straight up. He has not flinched or shied away from it, yet he's remained a faithful Catholic. So I think his advice we should at least take seriously. So I want to talk about, though, what do I think we should do in this situation? Now, I want to make something clear. This podcast is not about Steve or Skocek or about Rod Dreher, about Joseph Scamber, or by any other public figure who has left the church. I know a number of them. I know of a number of them, and I know a lot that you don't know about necessarily, and you know of many who I don't know about. There are people who have fallen away from the church, who are faithful Catholics, fallen away because of the crisis of scandals in the church today. In fact, that is one of the things that drives me in what I do and what we do here at Crisis is exactly those people. We want to make sure faithful Catholics know that if that yes, there's a scandal and crisis going on in the church. You don't have to pretend there's not, but what is the way forward? And so really, in a sense, this podcast kind of encapsulates my whole vision, my whole view of what Crisis is here for and why I do what I do. Because obviously bringing up the scandal in the church, the fear is they'll make people leave the church. In fact, I've had that criticism leveled at me many times. If you talk so much about the scandal, about the crisis, then you're just going to lead people out the door. And then they might point to somebody like Rod Dreher or Steve Skocek or Joseph Scamber about it, you know, as an example of why showing that that's the case. But I don't think that's the way to go about it. I think if we ignore the problems in the church, we ignore the crisis in the church, then what happens is that people will know, hey, this is really going on. People are acting like it's not. I don't want to be part of an organization that lies to itself. So I do think we have to address it. So my point here, though, is when I talk about things we should do and shouldn't do, I'm not talking about any specific person. I don't have them in mind. I don't know any of them well enough to know exactly what they've done in their own lives. So that, obviously, I can't talk about it on that level. So what do I think we can do? I think there's a couple options. One is we can keep our head down. And by that, what do I mean? I mean, basically, we ignore the scandals going on a private level. Like, I do think enough people know about it that I'm going to talk about it, but I think there is something to be said. There's a valuable advice to that. You just live out your life and you live your Catholic life. You pray, you go to mass, receive the sacraments, live a family life, work, do all the things you have to do. You ignore what's going on at the Vatican. You ignore what's going on in the local chancery, maybe even the local rectory. You just ignore what's going on and you keep your head down. And you can be saved by doing that. And I'm not going to say that's a bad thing. In fact, for many people, that might be the best thing to do. The problem, though, is that the crisis is so deep, so pervasive, that eventually it will probably come to you. I mean, the perfect example is if you've been attending the traditional Latin Mass, and you love your parish and it's helping you grow in holiness, you're becoming a better person, a better father, better mother, a better Catholic, and your parish is really helping you with that. You're part of a beautiful community. Well, that might just get pulled away from you. It might get taken from you because of the crisis going on at the Vatican and at the church. So you can't always avoid it. Plus, I mean, it's just a matter of, these things impact you, impact us all directly. Maybe a family member is divorced, gets remarried, starts receiving communion. And you're like, well, the Pope said it was okay. Or maybe a family member is using contraception, gets a vasectomy or something like that. And they're just like, well, it's okay. The Pope says it's not a big deal. The Vatican says it's not a big deal. These things will impact us. It will reach us. We can't completely ignore it unless we maybe live in a monastery. Of course, the monastery could end up getting shut down by the Vatican. But it's very difficult to really, unless you're going to live as a hermit. I guess a hermit. There we go. Let's all become hermits. Okay, that's not really going to happen. So that is one possibility, but I don't think that is the right answer, to just simply try to ignore it as much as possible and put her hands to her ears, say, like a little kid does when, you know, she doesn't want to get disciplined. She just acts like she can't hear you or see you. So what's the second option? The second option would be to live a balanced Catholic life, a balanced Catholic life. Emphasis on the word balanced. I think this is the key right here. The key is balance. if all of your energy and all of your connection to the Catholic Church is made up of focusing on what's going wrong, there's a real good chance you're going to leave, because why would you stay? How is that going to make you happy? I know we're not Catholic to be happy, but if being Catholic makes you miserable, there's a real good chance you're going to want to get the heck out of Dodge. And I don't blame you. I mean, I think you're wrong. I think you've become imbalanced. I think you don't see the big picture. But the point is, if you're completely miserable being Catholic, if every time you go to Mass, you're upset because liturgical abuses or whatever the case may be, if every time you think about Catholicism, it's thinking about how bad Pope Francis is or how bad your bishop is or something like that, you're not going to last. It's just simply not going to last. So we have to have a balanced view of Catholicism. By balance, that does not mean you stick your head in the sand about the problems. It doesn't mean we ignore them, but it also means we put them in perspective. I think that's probably the best way to put it, having a balanced life, is you put the scandals, the crisis in perspective. And there's a number of ways that we do that. We put that in perspective. The first one is a life of prayer. I don't care how repetitive I sound on this. I just think it's just so important. I don't know if people really recognize how important it is. It's my opinion, if you do not spend at least 1 hour a day, I don't care what your vocation is. I don't care if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're a CEO of a corporation, if you're a priest, bishop, whatever. If you don't spend at least an hour a day in prayer, you should not at all be involved with dealing with the crisis in the church. You should not be commenting on it. You should not be reading about it. You should not be dealing with it all, because you have an unbalanced life if you're spending less than an hour a day in prayer. Now, I personally think that the church has given us a very balanced view also of the foundations of our prayer life. I think obviously it begins with the sacraments, going to Mass. Obviously, you should go to Sunday Mass. Every holy day and Sunday, you should go to Mass. You should also make an attempt to go to Mass more than that if you can. I mean, a lot of that depends on where you live, your job, your responsibilities, stuff like that. But if you can get to Mass more than once a week, great, do that. But at least go every Sunday. And I think most people I'm talking to, that's the case. Also, go to confession regularly. I think minimum is once a month. That's all the spiritual. I'm not a spiritual director. Don't claim to be one. But all the spiritual directors I've read and talked to and all the priests say, yeah, definitely go to confession at least once a month. If you go weekly, even better.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. Z-Biotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with Z-Biotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. Z-Biotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit zbiotics.com to learn more.
But so you have Mass as foundation of prayer. That's not your hour of prayer a day, though. That doesn't count. That's outside of your hour of day. Your hour a day of prayer can be made up of a number of things. Personally, I think praying the divine office is key. I really do think that's a key foundational point for Catholics, praying the divine office. And personally, I do think it should be the old divine office. I'm not going to get into a traditional Mass, Novus Ordo debate here. But I prayed the liturgy hours, the new office, for about 17 years, something like that. And then I switched about 10 years ago to the old old breviary, the divine office. And let me tell you, it's transformationally different. And mostly it's because of the collects, to be honest. The prayers are just so much deeper. They're so much more rich. I think it impacts how you look at things. And when I say pray the office, lay people, we're not going to pray every hour of the office. It's just not going to be, it's not practical. And so, for example, what I do is I pray morning prayer lauds every morning. And then I pray with my family. I pray night prayer, compline at night. So I do too. But your mileage may vary. Depends on, you know, your own personal situation, what you're going to do. Obviously, the rosary is a key tool we have, especially as Western Christians, the rosary is key. It could be a replacement for the office or an addition to the office. But I would say pray the rosary every day. But here's the key. That's not enough. I don't think going to Mass once a week is enough. I don't think praying the office or even the rosary every day is enough. I would argue you need to also have mental prayer. You need to have devotional time where you are, maybe you read some of the scriptures and you meditate upon it, but some type of mental prayer I think is essential. I got a quote recently from a saint where he basically said, if you don't have mental prayer, you're not going to remain Catholic. And I can't remember now who it was. Maybe it was Alphonsus Liguria. I can't remember. Anyway, the point is, I'm saying it now, and I'm not a saint, but it makes sense. No, saints have said this, that basically you need to have mental prayer, which is a time in which you are allowing God to speak to you, where you're blocking out all that's going on in your life, and you're focused on maybe you're meditating on a scripture passage, or just maybe meditating on a virtue, or you are contemplating the mysteries of God. You need to have that time of talking to God. I think that's required. So your office, your rosary, your mental prayer, all that should add up to at least an hour a day. I think that's required. So now beyond that, I don't think, and I think again, I think we have to do even more than that. If we're going, and this is for people who are following what's going on in the church and maybe even commenting on it on Twitter or Facebook, at your blog or whatever the case may be. I think these things are required. And yes, by the way, I am speaking to myself here. And I'm telling myself these things because I know if I don't do them, I'm in trouble. Whenever I start to slip from them, that's when I start having the biggest issues of my own spiritual life. So I am speaking to myself here as much as I am speaking to anybody else. The second thing, after the life of prayer, a second thing I would say to have a balanced schedule, like read history, particularly church history. I know people like to say today is the worst time in history of church. I do think we are in a uniquely bad time of the church. And by that, I mean that I don't think there's ever been a time in church history quite like this one. I think there are parallels to other times, parallels obviously to the Arian crisis in the 4th century, parallels to the medieval times when we have multiple popes and a real diminishing of the papacy, the 10th century pornocracy. When popes were just awful. I think there are parallels, but I don't think anything adds up quite like we have today. We have a mix that I don't think other times have had. However, that being said, I think that helps you put things in perspective. If the Pope says something terrible today, if you know history, you know, okay, popes have sometimes not been that great. And I'm saying that as that's my English understatement there. Really, what I'm saying is popes can be terrible at times. And there have been terrible popes at times. Awful, just awful popes. Let's not act like every pope, you know, pick your favorite pope, Pope Pius X or Pope John Paul II. I don't care who it is. Not all of them have been like that. Some of them have been completely hideous men who are destined for hell. So if we happen to have one now, if you know history, you know that's happened before. And so it just helps you put things in perspective. I also think reading the Bible, like especially the Old Testament, is another way. That's a little different because that's spiritual reading, but that also gives you a good history lesson of how God works through these evil times and brings us to him even then. If we don't know history, what happens is we over-exaggerate the problems of today. And as somebody, I mean, if you follow me at all, you know I don't shy away from saying what the problems of today are. But at the same time, I do recognize there are specific problems. They're not the worst problems that ever happened in the history of the world. They're not the only problems. And we lived in some golden age before we came along. That's not the case. There have been many terrible times in the church if we know history. And I also think just reading secular history as well, not just church history, when you see how our nation is crumbling before our very eyes, talking to Americans here, but it's probably happening in other countries too right now. When you see America crumbling before our very eyes, I mean, just last night was the FBI raid of Trump's estate in Florida. Another example of how our country's unraveling. Well, if you know history, you can see how, okay, this has happened before. Like recently I read about the Russian Revolution and you saw how Russia unraveled before their very eyes in the early 20th century. There's a lot of parallels, by the way, between our times and those times. And you read that and you say, okay, I see now how this works. You understand things a little better. Reading about the French Revolution is another example. So I think that helps us put things in perspective, that we want to prevent getting to a point where we're at the French Revolution. But if we don't understand the French Revolution, we might not recognize our specific issues, what we're having. So read about the read history. Another third piece. So prayer, life of prayer every day, read history. I also say read Lives of the Saints. Now, this is maybe a subset under history, but I really mean it a different way. Understand how the saints deal with adversity. Understand how the saints deal with scandal. Now, sometimes you have the problem that certain saints' biographies are hagiography, and so they don't really talk about the struggles the saint had, or they don't really talk about how bad things were. They kind of minimize it a little bit. But if you read a real good history of saints, you'll see how they dealt with a lot of problems, both inside and outside the church, and how they had to deal with that. I mean, just read maybe St. Athanasius, something about his life and what he had to deal with the Arian bishops and all the Arian emperor and all that stuff. But I think it helps us to see how God works in these, in the lives of these men and women who are saints, because not one saint ever lived in a golden age. In fact, the reason they were saints is because there were problems in the world and in the church at that time. That's how they became saints, is because they resisted that. So the worst times produced the best saints. And so I really do believe that we can be saints today, but we need to read about the saints in order to understand that and understand how to deal with the crisis in the church today. Another thing I would say is get a hobby. Get a hobby. Something that's completely unrelated to Catholicism. Obviously, it needs to be one that is healthy, is helps you in your maybe mentally, emotionally, physically, whatever. But get a hobby. It might be reading certain types of books or something like that. It might be gardening. It might be, I don't know, something like, it might be shooting. It might be hunting. It might be, you know, there's a lot of different ways it can be. I would just recommend that the hobby should be something as disconnected from this world as possible. What I mean by that is this. One of my hobbies has always been to follow baseball. But it's getting more and more difficult to follow baseball, particularly Major League Baseball, because it's getting more and more woke. In fact, there was a commercial. I don't really watch anything with commercials very much except for baseball. I was watching baseball the other day, and a commercial came on that was just unbelievably awful. It was, I'm not even going to talk about it here, but it was just, it was by a Gillette, you know, company. They were talking about stupid stuff. But anyway, the point is, I was like, I can't believe this getting shoved in my face when I'm trying to just watch a baseball game. But it did remind me, if your hobby is connected to this world, the more it's connected to our culture, the more likely it is it's going to be actually harmful in the end. So I would argue, get a healthy hobby, typically tied to nature, for example. Maybe it's hiking, gardening, something like that. It's a great way to really let your brain do something else than think about the problems in church today. Maybe it's reading Shakespeare or Dickens or something like that, great literature, Dostoevsky, whatever the case may be. Allow yourself to not be thinking about anything related to Catholicism, because if thinking about it triggers you to think about the crisis, that can be unhealthy as well. So I would just say get a hobby. Make sure you have a hobby, one that's in keeping with your vocation, obviously your state of life. You don't want to get a hobby that takes you away from your family all the time, obviously. But sometimes, in fact, if you get a hobby that involves you more with your family, like fishing, you go fishing with your kids. That's a great idea right there. You can just relax, not think about what's going on in the world, and just fish. Okay. Another thing the last thing I would just say is, so I've talked about life of prayer, read history, read about the saints, get a hobby. Another thing is avoid being in a constant state of anger. And by this, I mean, avoid social media if you need to. If that means you're completely off social media, that's what you should do. It's not worth your soul. Trust me, Twitter is not worth your soul. Now, I am involved on Twitter. I'm on Facebook some other social media, but I have very strict rules about how I use it. I freely admit I am too weak to have social media on my telephone. And I have a dumb phone. I have an iPhone that sits in my office that I just use for stuff like two-factor authentication and things like that and depositing checks. I just can't do it. I cannot have social media on a device I carry with me at all times. It's unhealthy for me in a million different ways, but particularly spiritually. And so be honest with yourself. If you can't do it, admit it. Admit it to yourself. I mean, I had to admit it to myself. It took me a number of years before I did. But get off it completely if you need to. don't let, and because understand, social media is geared towards anger. If you, and this is something I admit that I am guilty of, but if you, like, if you just followed my Twitter account, that's the only thing you knew about me, is you just saw my tweets, you would probably think I think about the crisis a lot more than I do. I mean, heck, it's my job in a sense, but I'd say a decent percentage of my tweets are complaints about something. Something went wrong, something is wrong, and I'm trying to explain why it's wrong or say that it's wrong. And so if that's all you're seeing about me, for example, you don't know me, because that's not how my brain, it's not like I'm thinking about that all day, every day. I'm thinking about a lot of different things that have nothing to do with the crisis in the church, because I know I have to. But if you're following people, and somebody like Taylor Marshall is the exact same way. I know him enough to know he'd say the exact same thing, that you don't judge him just by his Twitter account. Any of the figures that you might follow on Twitter, your friends or whatever, they're not the same thing. A person is not the same as their Twitter account. So recognize that. Recognize that we are on social media. This is not reality completely. It's a skewed version of reality. And so take that in consideration. So limit your time on social media as much as possible, because you don't want to be in a constant state of anger. Okay, so I just want to just reiterate, it's a real danger to be a faithful Catholic today and to see what's going on in the church today. This is our cross. This is our temptation, is to know and see very clearly the crisis in the church and in our culture, and not be tempted to fall away, and not to fall away. And so we need to set up these ways in which we do at least an hour of prayer a day, going to Mass each week, going to confession regularly, doing all these various things I talked about. Keep, you know, praying an hour, at least an hour a day, having a balanced lifestyle, reading history, reading Lives of Saints, having a hobby, not being consumed by social media. I think all these things are very important, and that we need to do them. So I think I'm going to leave it there. And I felt like this was important. Like I said, friends of mine, people I know have fallen away, and it breaks my heart when anybody does, but it particularly breaks my heart when it's somebody who really did love the church, really did love being Catholic at some point in their life. And now they felt that they can't be Catholic anymore. I think we need to make sure that doesn't happen. Let's not act like it can't happen to us. It can happen if we don't do the things we need to do to stay faithful to Christ and to his church. Okay, that's it for now. I will wrap it up there. Just pray for me, and I will pray for all of you. And let's just continue to live a very faithful Catholic life, fight against the scandals in the church, but most importantly, fight for our souls. Okay, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.